Hello, everyone, and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We are your hosts, Matt Levine.
And Vincent Hannum.
And we are talking about all of our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts are welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody.
Yeah. Surprise episode, everybody.
Bonus.
But we had to, right?
I was very excited when I heard that this was going to be playing for just a couple days in the Twin Cities area. I think it had just like, you know, nationally, like Showtime for a couple days. Fathom Events played this for, you know, I think it was January 11th and 12th throughout the country. So yeah, I was really excited about this one and I was not disappointed.
No, just like Shin Godzilla, it just is such a great revision, I think, of such a legendary property, just to like see it in a new light, all revamped. I had some quibbles, but overall I have a lot of positives.
Me too. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, thank you. Thanks again for hanging out. Thanks for listening to the podcast or watching on YouTube or however you interact with our stuff. I'll mention Frankenstein Conquers the World. We'll be talking about that pretty soon. We'll be teaming up with the hosts of the podcast, The Frankenstein Minute.
Yeah, love these guys. I mean, we keep talking about them on each episode here for our faithful returning listeners. Stay tuned. And we just, Matt and I are really into our website right now where we are writing reviews. So if you're a fan of the printed word, check out campkaijumoviereviews.com where you can read about not just the movies we're covering on the podcast, but most excitedly, additional monster movies, because there's so many, we can't unfortunately feature them all on the show. So we're typing up reviews about, I just released one about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, and we have to talk about our Patreon, of course, which is slowly becoming the go-to one-stop shop, I think, for fans of Camp Kaiju. Our lowest tier is $5, and for that, you get great bonus content. I mean, our episodes on the show are only limited to about an hour. Matt and I, we're talking at least another 30 minutes about not just monster movies, but just a lot of cinephile banter, I call it. Hitchcock, Howard Hawks, heck, even Lars von Trier. So we're just kind of talking about all sorts of things in addition to the great monster movie content. So again, just $5 gets you that. If you want to go up to 10, we're happy to feature your own recommendation for the show. And that is something we will record with your help. If you got one you just really want to share with us, we're happy to feature it 100%.
Totally. Yeah, we're excited to get those recommendations and suggestions. So please keep them coming. Thank you to our current patrons. We really appreciate you. Your support helps, you know, pay for our subscription to Zoom. It helps pay for like getting these movies and like having access to them. And not to mention all the swag that we're able to give out and the events that we're able to do. We did an event around Halloween at the Trilon Cinema in Minneapolis last year. Thanks again to our patrons because your money helps to support those things. So we appreciate you.
And so for Kelly, Chris, and Frank, we got to hit the Gamera gong. And Matt, I think it's your turn.
It's true. I actually have never hit the gong before. So this is it's the first time for me.
You're missing out.
Yeah. All right. Got to warm up here. All right. Here we go. Woo! Let me tell you, it's one of the greatest experiences I've had in my life to hit that gong. So you don't want to miss out. But tonight we are here to talk about Sheen Ultraman. What's your history with not only Sheen Ultraman, but the whole Ultraman franchise in general?
I'm such a noob when it comes to this. I've always heard of Ultraman, of course, My mom, I always talk about how big of a nerd my mom is, and that's where I get it from. She always talked about watching Ultraman when she was a kid in the 60s, and we gifted her like the first season from like 1966, the DVD collection. So I borrowed that from her a few months ago, and I just kind of steadily made my way through it. It's amazing. It's cheesy. It's campy. It's that peak Showa era rubber suit monster action that you love the Godzilla movies for, but with a giant, like, I don't know, extraterrestrial spaceman. Yeah, it's great. But that's really all I know. And I know there's like dozens and dozens of movies and other iterations beyond the original series. I'm just not well versed in those takes on the character. So I went into Shin Ultraman just ready for whatever they were gonna throw at me.
I'm a total newbie. I have not seen any episodes of the original TV series. In doing research for the recording tonight, I read that this is the 37th Ultraman film, which is crazy to me. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Where have they been?
Right. Right. I mean, that's a great question, because like you would think that these, you know, I do think they're like sort of available in the United States, but they're not like, you know, widely talked about. They're not at the same level as Godzilla or like Gamera or some of the other sort of like classic kaiju beasts. And Ultraman is not, you know, maybe not fully in the kaiju subgenre, I guess, but you know, I'm still surprised that Ultraman does not get the same kind of love that those other classic beasts get, you know?
Yeah, within the community, certainly. I've seen enough posts on Instagram from other accounts where it's like the Mount Rushmore of kaiju. And often it'll be Godzilla, Gamera, King Kong, and Ultraman.
Cool.
Just for like lasting legacy.
That's great to hear. I was not aware of that. That's, yeah. And you know, like I'm coming to a lot of kind of like classic Japanese kaiju movies, like for the first time, and I feel woefully inadequate sometimes, but this is like, it's part of the process, and I'm very excited to be introduced to this stuff. And yeah, I mean, judging at least from this film, Ultraman is pretty awesome. So I'm excited to explore more of it.
Yeah. Such a deeply, at least this film, deeply philosophical on the nature of humanity and like what, just a lot of like deep thoughts on life and existence that I wasn't expecting. So those are kudos that I'm sure we'll both get to.
On that note, should we dive into the story and go from there?
Yeah. Spoiler alerts, everybody. It's a brand new movie. I know it's highly anticipated.
Yeah, and I just want to say that I think like the ending of the movie and some of the other surprises along the way are really fascinating and unexpected and kind of like tie into those themes that you were just talking about. So I think in this case, we kind of have to give those spoilers to talk about some of these things. So fair warning about that again.
Okay. So following the invasion of several kaiju in Japan, the government establishes the S-Class Species Suppression Protocol, otherwise known as the SSSP. To eliminate further threats, when the SSSP responds to an attack by a kaiju dubbed Narunga, a giant silver extraterrestrial emerges from the sky and defeats Narunga. However, SSSP member Shinji Kaminaga is injured while trying to save a child during the incident. Analyst Hiroko Asami is transferred from the Public Security Intelligence Agency to SSSP and partnered with Kaminaga, who has seemingly recovered from his injuries. Asami submits a report on the silver giant dubbed Ultraman.
So then the SSSP responds to another attack by a kaiju named Gobora. Unbeknownst to the SSSP, Kaminaga transforms into Ultraman, rising from the ground instead of crash landing from space as he did during the first kaiju attack. Ultraman defeats Gobora before it attacks a nuclear waste storage facility. Soon, however, another alien named Zarub makes contact with the SSSP with the intention of partnering with Japan's ministry. After Kaminaga learns of Zarub's true intentions to influence countries to destroy each other by triggering conflict, he is neutralized and kidnapped by Zarub, meaning Kaminaga is neutralized and kidnapped. And then Zarub attacks Japan while disguised as Ultraman and leaks footage of Kaminaga's transformation, resulting in an international manhunt. I do also want to say we're probably like 15 or 20 minutes into the movie at this point, so this plot moves fast, let me tell you. So there's an international manhunt for Kaminaga. Asami, who's kind of his partner at the SSSP, receives Kaminaga's transforming device called the Beta Capsule, and she keeps that for safekeeping from Zarub. Asami then finds and frees Kaminaga, but is captured by Zarub herself. Kaminaga retrieves the Beta Capsule and transforms into Ultraman, saves Asami, and exposes Zarub's disguise before defeating him.
While Kaminaga goes into hiding, Asami is kidnapped and transformed into a mind-controlled giant by another alien named Mephiles. Demonstrating good faith, Mephiles reverts Asami back to normal size using the Beta Box, a large version of the Beta Capsule. Mephiles, is it Mephiles, right?
I think in the movie they said Mephiles.
That's right. I knew it. I knew I was saying it wrong. Okay, Mephiles. Yeah, that sounds cooler too, more menacing.
Yeah.
Mephiles strikes a deal with the ministry to supply them with the Beta Box in return for unconditional obedience. Kaminaga disagrees with Mephiles' plan and conspires with the SSSP to stop the exchange. They successfully steal back the box, and Ultraman fights Mephiles, who aborts his plan after noticing Ultraman's superior, Zophie, observing their battle. Mephiles warns Ultraman of a coming threat before departing Earth.
So Kaminaga converses with Zophie in the forest where Kaminaga was earlier injured. It is revealed that Kaminaga was not only injured, but actually killed by debris when Ultraman landed. So Kaminaga was killed and Ultraman takes on his human form. Inspired by Kaminaga's sacrifice, Ultraman assumed his identity to better understand him. Zophie informs Ultraman that he is to face punishment for breaking their planet's code of merging with a human. Believing that humanity would pose a threat if they could evolve into giants, Zophie employs the ultimate weapon, Zetan, to eradicate all humans on the planet.
Kaminaga warns the SSSP, leaves them a flash drive, and flies to Earth's orbit as Ultraman to stop Zetan. Defeated, Kaminaga is hospitalized while the government decides to keep Zophie's doomsday plot a secret in order to avoid mass panic. SSSP physicist Akihisa Taki opens Kaminaga's flash drive and uncovers the basic principles and theorems of the Beta Capsule. After Kaminaga regains consciousness, Taki reveals to him the method that he and international scientists have devised to defeat Zetan. Kaminaga transforms into Ultraman and opens a black hole by igniting the Beta Capsule 1 millisecond before Zetan fires its heat wave. Zetan and Ultraman are then swallowed by a black hole, but Zophie rescues Ultraman.
Zophie then insists that Ultraman return to their home planet, but Ultraman wishes to stay and protect Earth. Zophie refuses to compromise, so Ultraman decides to sacrifice his alien self to resurrect Kaminaga, his human counterpart. Zophie questions Ultraman's decision to sacrifice himself to save an inferior race, but after witnessing humanity's teamwork to defeat Zetan, he is forced to admire their tenacity in the face of death. There you go. There is, you know, kind of a happy ending. Kaminaga is resurrected and reunites with his SSSP colleagues. But yeah, that's the plot in a nutshell.
How did Kaminaga, was it explained thoroughly? So he's alive now? He's separated from Ultraman?
It is. I feel like it was not fully explained at the end of the movie. Like, you know, Ultraman is both his alien self and this human Kaminaga self. He merged with this human. And it seems like at the end of the movie, he sacrifices his alien self so that the human Kaminaga can be resurrected. But I think he is now Ultraman. That's what I took out of it.
I think that that is correct. I think we have to do some mental gymnastics here to figure it out. That's also the downside with reviewing a new release, because we are unable to go back and rewatch it. So we're doing our best to just kind of remember last week's adventure to the movie, to the Cineplex.
Yeah, on last week's episode. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I mean, the plot admittedly is a pretty convoluted, hard to follow plot. And that probably is one of the flaws in the movie, as we'll talk about later. But it also makes it a lot of fun. And if the plot doesn't totally make sense, I'm kind of okay with that. I feel like in the inevitable next installment of the Ultraman series, maybe we'll find out a little bit more about what happened.
Yeah, there's so much, right?
Yeah,
this movie was specifically based off of that original series from Tsuburaya Productions in the 60s. So it's like an introductory, basic, everybody knows story about Ultraman. It doesn't get into what I'm sure exists, like huge nitty gritty world building. There's Ultra Women. There's like a whole race that you eventually get into. This movie did not go there, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it would have been even more impossible to follow if it included all that stuff in there. So, you know, I kind of feel that way about some other movies too. Like, I'm kind of thinking of Godzilla versus Biollante from the late 80s, where like the plot does not really make any sense. And at the end, I'm like, wait, so like the spirit of this dead girl was now like unleashed in the cosmos through like plant spores that Biollante intentionally ejects or whatever. Like, I feel like this kind of thing is like happens a lot with kaiju movies, and it's just part of it. And I kind of find it very charming when the plot doesn't totally make sense, you know?
Yeah, especially Shin Ultraman. It moves so quickly.
Indeed. The film was directed by Shinji Higuchi. He was the co-director on Shin Godzilla with Hideaki Anno. Shinji Higuchi was the special effects director on the Heisei Gamera trilogy. He directed Attack on Titan from 2017. And he has worked on Neon Genesis Evangelion as well as a writer and director. So yeah, very accomplished special effects director, writer, jack of all trades.
Since we did our episode on Shin Godzilla, I have watched at least the first entry in that Gamera Heisei trilogy. That movie we have to bring to the podcast at some point. Like, I watched it and I loved it, the special effects. Reading more about that, that's Gamera, Guardian of the Universe. That particular film is regarded by many to be, if not the best kaiju ever made, movie ever made, but among the best. And that trilogy as a whole is highly regarded. I had no idea.
Neither did I until you just said that right now. That's amazing. We absolutely have to bring those to the podcast. Especially considering how much I loved Shin Godzilla and Shin Ultraman. Like, I'm a new Shinji Higuchi fan, you know? Like, I'm on his bandwagon now.
Me too. And so, like, Attack on Titan, I've never seen. I want to see it. Like, I want to go... Does Video Universe have a Shinji Higuchi section? I need to rent them all.
I've never been to Video Universe, and I'm going to go as soon as possible. I would not be surprised if they had a Shinji Higuchi section. That seems like the kind of thing they would do.
Totally. Yeah, so I'm with you. Like, Shin, not only Shin Godzilla, but Shin Ultraman, I think, is a great gateway drug to the Higuchi brand of kaiju films, because he really clearly knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and you can see that he, of course, has a love for these characters and this, you know, these stories and these franchises, but he's not content to just sort of like rehash the same old thing. He wants to bring like new commentary, new ideas, new visual form to it. So that's the ideal combination when you have somebody who loves the material they're working with, but they're not content to just like recycle the same old thing, you know?
Right, while still honoring, I think, those trademarks of the character. Yeah, it's a fine line that I think more directors think they do than actually do. Because you either get a whole new interpretation and fans are left thinking, that's not what I want. Or you're not doing a different enough spin on it. And then you get haters who go, well, why'd you even bother remaking it?
Yeah. Totally. I sort of feel like Peter Jackson's King Kong, which we also have talked about on the podcast before, is a good example of that. And I like that movie quite a bit, but it's like The new stuff that it adds is too much of a departure for like hardcore King Kong fans, but I feel like for people who like want something totally new, there's too much homage to the original King Kong. It's kind of like the criticism that I've heard about that, you know? But yeah, it's a fine line to sort of like, yeah, be like a purist, but also make something new, you know?
Right. I think Shinji Higuchi, he's had a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, the film stars Takumi Saito. He plays Shinji Kaminaga, an executive strategy officer who worked for the National Police Agency Security Bureau before he is designated to the SSSP. As we just talked about, he is killed during Ultraman's first appearance. And after that, Ultraman takes his human appearance. One thing I thought was kind of interesting about Takumi Saito is that his father worked on the 1973 TV series Ultraman Taro. And Saito was a big Ultraman fan when he was a kid. He like had the action figures. He played, you know, with the Ultraman toys all the time as a kid. And he's talked about that in sort of like mentioning his role as Kaminaga in this movie. So yeah, a lot, you know, like in addition to Shinji Higuchi, we also have the kind of like the lead actor who just loves Ultraman and seems very, very excited to be part of this reboot, you know?
What was really cool with watching this in theaters in the United States, I did not expect the whole pre-show we got. So we had interviews with Shinji Higuchi as well as Takumi Saito, and he was talking about just that family history with the series. What did you think of all that stuff?
I loved it. Yeah, no, it's especially me being a rookie to Ultraman. Like it did provide some much, I wouldn't say much needed, but some very helpful context that kind of like helped me see the legacy of this character. So I loved all that stuff. I was especially fascinated to see that there was like a web series, which I think was called Shin Ultra Fight, which was released online to kind of like drum up publicity for Shin Ultraman. And it has like a lot of the sort of like ancillary characters from the TV shows over the years. They had some quizzes about that before the movie when we saw it, and I knew zero of the answers. Like that's how much of a noob I
Yeah.
am. But
Same.
yeah, but all that stuff was really fun and really informative, so I loved it.
It made me like kind of just want more of that kind of experience from my movie theater, just, outings. I don't know if that would get old pretty fast, but maybe, I don't know, like the old days, like give me a little cartoon, give me a little bit of like a game, like a little quiz we can all do together.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, make a whole night's entertainment out of it.
Yeah.
I would love that. It would be better than like, you know, car commercials and other stuff you see before movies nowadays.
Just give us a new Bugs Bunny short.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not too much to ask. And it was very cool to see everybody's enthusiasm in the interviews that they played before the movie because it seems like everybody involved in the making of the film was so excited about it and loves Ultraman. Like
Yeah. It was a such an ensemble that, I mean, criticism, whatever. I mean, no, I didn't feel like there was like one, except obviously Kaminaga and his partner, Hiroko Asami. She was played by Masami Nagasawa. She was the analyst, of course. She's working with the SSSP. The other characters, great supporting characters, maybe not the most memorable, but they had their moments. Daiki Arioka played Akihisa Taki. He's a physicist and he's a huge Star Trek nerd. He's got all these like little action figures and figurines on his workspace, which I just thought was really, really nice and funny in like a tongue-in-cheek sort of way.
not only is it a good way to suggest that like this movie is taking place in like a reality, like our own reality where we recognize the Star Trek toys and all that and the models and whatnot. But you know, it kind of pays tribute to like yeah, of course not just Ultraman, but also Star Trek. There's kind of a fun Attack of the 50-Foot Woman homage in the movie too. So there are a lot of like clever little nods throughout the film, which are very enjoyable. So we also have Akari Hayami, who plays Yumi Funabari, another member of SSSP. She is a biologist. We have Tetsushi Tanaka as Tatsuhiko Munakata, the chief of the SSSP. This was kind of cool, I thought. We have Hidetoshi Nishijima as Kimio Tamura, the leader of the SSSP, not the chief, I guess. He was in Drive My Car, which just came out last year, a very critically acclaimed movie, really fantastic movie. And I knew I recognized him when I was watching Sheen Ultraman, and I was like, yeah, he was in Drive My Car, like one of the most successful and acclaimed Japanese movies that came out in 2021. So he has a lot of range. He's worked with Kiyoshi Kurosawa, Takeshi Kitano, two directors that I like very much. So I always just admire it when actors kind of go back and forth between, like, you know, like, I don't know, classy, art house, dramatic fare. I know I have issues with some of those words, but like they go back and forth between that and like campy fun superhero stuff like this.
Yeah. Was Drive My Car a Japanese production?
Yeah. Ryusuke Hamaguchi, I believe, is the director's name. Really, really, really fantastic movie. It's pretty long. It's about 3 hours long, but it's really great. Yeah.
Cool. I'll add it to my watch list.
Sadly, there are no monsters in it, though.
Well, I guess I don't watch any other movies.
I did not mean to imply that. Sorry.
Ah, how dare you insult my movie intelligence. Hideki Anno, as well as another actor, Bean Furuya, both played Ultraman. So Anno was still getting involved with this production, as well as, you know, obviously he and Higuchi worked together on Shin Godzilla, but Anno for Ultraman, he was a supervisor and organizer. He wrote, he co-produced and co-edited this film. He first wrote a draft of Ultraman in 2013 as a labor of love. Another longtime Ultraman fan. It was one of the first films with one of, one of his own very first films was a parody called Return of Ultraman in 1983.
Which I've never seen, but if we can track that down, I definitely think we should bring that to the podcast as well.
Yeah, we need more Ultraman after this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. BanditsEmporium.com, everybody, is the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. Check out BanditsEmporium.com or just hit the link in our bio to check out their selection of monster-inspired tees. Part of these proceeds go to supporting this very show. So not only can you be a patron, you can also just buy a t-shirt and support us that way. You can visit BanditsEmporium.com, whatever your style, they have you covered. As they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, we have a new shirt alert. It's called Mech City, and it features a Pacific Rim type of mech with a laser sword and a giant gun, and it's standing amidst the rubble of a city on fire. So it's just a really cool design from our in-house artist, Lucas Rollison. Go BanditsEmporium.com. Check out that shirt. Buy that shirt. You won't be disappointed.
I can't wait. Yeah, so I briefly mentioned before, this is the 37th film in the Ultraman franchise, which is just mind-boggling. Again, the Ultraman character was introduced in 1966 with the TV series Ultra Q and Ultraman. And Ultraman, to this day, is one of the most popular tokusatsu properties in Japan. Tokusatsu, for those who don't know, live action with a lot of practical effects. So that's kind of the suitmation stuff, a lot of the classic kaiju stuff. A helpful comparison for me, Ultraman was kind of called the Superman of Japan in some of the things that I read. So in terms of like popularity and cultural ubiquity, Ultraman is right up there with Superman for American audiences.
And I think it's important to note that Ultraman was created by Tsuburaya Productions, being Eiji Tsuburaya, who did all of the special effects work on the Showa era Godzilla movies. He was with Toho doing Godzilla pictures, and then he started his own production company, Ultraman being one of those projects he ended up working on.
Certainly a lot of overlap, right, in terms of like the aesthetic and the style and the design of the monsters and stuff like that.
In fact, there is one kaiju that Ultraman is known for fighting. It is the Godzilla suit from the 60s repurposed as a totally new kaiju. They just added like a frilly collar around, like a Dilophosaurus from Jurassic Park.
Oh, cool.
It reminds me of that. But it's not Godzilla. It's just something else. And there was a really great in Shin Ultraman, in the beginning, there's a quick montage of different kaiju terrorizing the countryside. And one of those kaiju is what looks like Shin Godzilla, but it's been repurposed as something entirely different, as an homage to that other kaiju.
I love that. And I love the fact that, like, the, you know, the in-jokes and the references and the homages in Shin Ultraman are, they're there for, like, the fans who really love kaiju and, like, the original Ultraman and all that. But they're not, like, overbearing. Like, I feel like you can go into this movie without being a hardcore fan and still get just as much out of it, you know?
Agreed.
So yeah, in the summer of 2017, Hideaki Anno was asked to write a proposal for a new trilogy of Ultraman productions. He submitted that proposal in early 2018, and the first draft of the Shin Ultraman screenplay was finished in early 2019. COVID difficulties resulted in a very long editing process that took about 2.5 years. So that's why the film was shot in 2019, but didn't come out in Japan until last year.
Yeah, I remember I've been following this movie for so long. Like, the hype for me and the community has just been like, when is this going to come out? I remember last year, maybe 2 years ago, just like feeling so deflated when I heard that it was made, it was ready to be released, and then postponed. Like, damn you, COVID.
Yeah. Of the many horrible things that COVID introduced to the world, delaying Shin Ultraman is one of the worst, for sure. Just kidding. Sorry. not to be. I'm just kidding, of course. But it's finally here. Vincent, would you say that you were like, you know, with like such a long lead-in time and like so much excitement building up, were you disappointed at all, or did it still meet your expectations?
Oh, this is a great question, because I want to be honest. Generally, I had a blast with Shin Ultraman. I think I need to rewatch it. I think it will appreciate as time goes on. I feel, however, I fell victim to the overhype, and I hate it when I do that. I always try to keep my expectations low because I feel like I did overhype it, and it wasn't, I don't know. I felt Shin Ultraman was a different tone and aesthetic with the computer graphics and things. Not that it was bad, it just wasn't what I had built up in my mind. And for that can suck sometimes when you really want to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I feel like I've been the victim of like overhyping something pretty often. I feel like I had kind of the inverse experience, because I did not have extremely high expectations for Shin Ultraman, although I liked Shin Godzilla a lot, but I didn't know the character, like the backstory, all that much. And yeah, I was it was a lot better than I thought it would be. So just to get back to like the release of the film a little bit, it came out in Japan on May 13th, 2022, to pretty mixed reviews in Japan. It actually kind of got generally more positive reviews in other countries when it was released at film festivals and got a wider release. Despite those mixed reviews, it was the sixth highest grossing Japanese film of last year and the most commercially successful Ultraman film so far. So it definitely did pretty well.
Yeah, I heard that too with the critical consensus in Japan versus foreign markets. And I just find that really, that kind of dichotomy really interesting. Maybe it's because like me as an American who don't have access to this stuff as much as domestic Japanese audiences, it's automatically going to be great because it's new, it's fresh. But maybe domestic Japanese audiences are like, we know Ultraman. Like, it's nothing we haven't really seen before.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I wonder if it would be the same thing as, like, a new Superman movie coming out that was, like, fine, but, like, not too, like, mind-blowing or ambitious. Maybe American reviews would be kind of the same way. So you're right that it's fascinating to kind of, like, look at those dichotomies and, like, ask why. Well, like, what is the reason for those differing critical opinions, you know?
Just like Shin Godzilla, our main overarching theme, I would say, is the inept government and bureaucratic red tape that exists in dealing with what are essentially natural disasters. You know, that's what the kaiju could represent. And although it's maybe a little bit more softer here than in Shin Godzilla. As I said before, Shin Godzilla to me had a darker message or a darker tone. Shin Ultraman, especially with the music, it presents as a slightly campier time, a more Saturday morning type of vibe. With that said, Just going back to our theme of governmental ineptitude, we are presented with the international relationship that Japan has with other countries. One character even says, quote, "It must be fun to be a superpower," talking about the United States, who, as par for the course, is relying on Japan to take care of some business, but only with America's help, only with American, you know, military supplies. And it's just this international bureaucracy that's enhanced by the domestic bureaucracy of Japan.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little, you know, like you said, it's a little gentler here. I feel like most of the politicians in this movie are like kind of well-intentioned, whereas in Shin Godzilla, it has like devastating consequences that they're so inept, you know? So it's like maybe a little bit softer, but I totally agree that like it's just as effective. It's just as kind of like admirably ambitious and trying to comment on, you know, political reality as we know it today. So.
And in fact, I think I recall with Shin Ultraman being even like it, the script being even more not pulling its punches with those themes, especially with the international relations with the United States. Because as we know, realistic, you know, in the real world, Japan's constitution is a pacifist constitution. It does rely on the United States for defense. It's something with current relations with China. Japan is quickly reassessing. And I think that those real world tensions are not just reflected in Shin Ultraman, but they are thrown in your face. Like, this is what's happening with Japanese-US relations.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because Shin Godzilla does have the scenes of like American politicians, and like those scenes are a little bit awkward just because of like the dialogue seems a little bit like stiff or whatever, you know. But yeah, like you're right that there are some lines of dialogue in Shin Ultraman that are just like like straight up kind of mocking other superpowers a little bit, which I always appreciate, you know?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, this is a political film at times.
It's kind of interesting because like you have that theme of like the ineptitude and the kind of like you know, squabbling between different countries, but you also have this theme of like individualism versus the social collective. I think to me that's one of the most interesting themes in Shin Ultraman. Kaminaga, Ultraman posing as Kaminaga when he goes to the SSSP office, is very confused by this. Like, it seems like he doesn't really understand the concept of like a social collective. And it's his partner, Asami, who kind of says, well, this is what human civilization kind of is. Like, we all work together. We have this society where we all kind of like have to band together. And that's what progress is, basically. And in a way, I feel like that's why Ultraman like falls in love with humanity a little bit and like even sacrifices himself to like save humanity, is because it seems like he was not aware that humans were so like had the potential to be so collaborative and so ingenious, you know. Like, it seems like maybe he thought they were all self-serving, like violent, greedy, like base species or whatever, you know. So I feel like this theme of individualism versus the social collective, and that like sort of being part of a community is what makes us human, is a pretty powerful and unexpectedly ambitious theme in this movie.
And this is why I rented The Day the Earth Stood Still, actually, because watching Shin Ultraman, I was reminded of Klaatu and his journey to Earth. And much like Shin Ultraman, he's an individual, he has a mission, but he is softened by the inherently good nature of human beings.
Yeah, The Day the Earth Stood Still is a great comparison for sure. I feel like maybe, you know, again, just the individual versus the collective. A lot of sci-fi gets into that. Especially, I just want to add, like, I think it's really fascinating now in, like, the wake of COVID where, like, you know, it's not very hard to wear a mask and like look out for your fellow people and like social distance and like try to do the right thing. But a lot of people had an issue with that when, you know, like at the height of COVID, people just kind of couldn't consider themselves part of a social collective. They could only see themselves as an individual. So I think in light of that, it's an even more compelling theme, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think that's an age old dilemma or issue humanity does grapple with. You know, I say humanity is inherently good, and I personally believe that, but I also personally believe that individuals can be inherently selfish, maybe not all the time, but we have our self-interests at stake, especially with our lives. And great movies that aren't afraid to tackle that, I think, are always worth watching, like Shin Ultraman, Day the Earth Stood Still. What is that tension there? And I don't think there is an easy answer.
I think that kind of gets at like one of the other fascinating themes of the movie too. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it just feels surprisingly existential to me, because the physicist character, Taki is his name, when he realizes that Zophy, the alien, is planning on destroying humanity with this ultra powerful device, he just becomes utterly depressed and despondent, which is understandable. And he's like, well, what does it matter anyway? We're just like insignificant specks in the cosmos. None of this matters. But, you know, I feel like the movie is trying to say, like, of course, for all of us, this does matter. Like, because, you know, we're all in this position together, because all of us humans are trying to figure this out at the same time. You know, like, the fact that we're insignificant specks in the cosmos doesn't really occur to us. Like, to us as human beings, like, this is the most important thing, like our existence and like trying to figure out who we are, like, you know, the good and the bad parts of humanity or whatever. So, and the movie presents these ideas in like a really crazy scene set in an alternate dimension. You know, I just love it. Like the combination of like silly and profound. I love that sort of thing.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Because it's complicated.
Indeed.
And it's trippy. Maybe the most compelling part of the movie, honestly.
I just, you know, I love the fact that we can talk about this stuff on Camp Kaiju. This is why we love monster movies.
Monster movies are great. We could leave it there. But if you out there have thoughts about any of that, share with us. We would gladly continue the conversation with you all wherever you want to engage. So Hideaki Anno admitted that the intention from the start was to make this a companion piece to Shin Godzilla. He said, quote, "The overall worldview of the film may be somewhat connected to that of Shin Godzilla. We do see this in the formal style and again some of those themes. Ultimately, this is connected to like the Shin connected universe that Toho Pictures is creating, a la the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So say what you will about the MCU, it can be a really connective way into a series that I am interested in seeing translated to Japan with some of these.
The thing that I think is cool about it is, like, you know, sort of like you mentioned, like the aesthetic and thematic like cohesiveness of that, because it does kind of seem like the Marvel movies don't have a lot of that consistency, like thematically. Well, there's some stuff going on thematically, but I don't know how like connected they are in that way. Like I just really admire the fact that like Shin Godzilla and Shin Ultraman, the themes are so out there and the formal style is so bold and in your face, kind of. Like, it seems like there's an edit like every half second in this movie, and like the compositions are just like really bizarre. Like there are some shots from like the point of view of a remote control or from like an empty chip bag and stuff like that. So yeah, like the thematic and formal cohesiveness of these movies, when they're so kind of like exaggerated and over the top, it takes some guts, I think, and these movies really pull it off. So yeah, the filmmakers set out to kind of combine the original suit from the 1966 series, an oil painting by Toll Narita of the character from 1983. I read that Toll Narita kind of did a lot of the original character artworks and character designs, like not in terms of like the suits themselves, but in just kind of like visualizing what the character could look like. So combining those designs throughout a long period of time, and then kind of updating it, eliminating some of the outdated aspects like a back fin and peepholes and things like that. I think Shinji Higuchi's quote is really interesting. So he said, quote, "Ultraman is bizarre when you think about it. He is dressed in a silvery, slimy thing that I don't know what it is. And although he looks like a human being, he is something other than a human being. For this project, we went through a series of adjustments to realistically reproduce the coexistence of Ultraman's metallic and biological aspects in CG." I just love that quote. And I, you know, like Ultraman's appearance seems simple, but clearly a lot of thought went into it.
That's that reimagining it, but retaining the basic features that we all know and love. I don't know. What do you think of the CGI in this film, generally speaking?
I felt it's hit or miss, I think. I felt similar about this movie as I did about Shin Godzilla, where like sometimes it looks fantastic. Like, for example, when you have like a real world shot of a city, and then in the background you can see like, you know, Godzilla, or in this case Ultraman, like towering in the distance, or like other kaijus or whatever, then it looks great. But I feel like whenever it tries to get closer to like the real carnage of like, you know, like trees being uplifted, or like a bunch of cars being like swept down a landslide or whatever, like when it really gets closer, you can tell how kind of like shoddy the CGI is at times. So I think when it's used sparingly, it's more effective.
Agreed. Like one moment that really works for me is when Asami is a giant woman and she's walking down the street. For some reason, I felt that was seamless related to the buildings around her. Yeah, but in other shots, like the fights with Gabora and Naranga, it just looked unfinished. It looked clumsy.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with Naranga, I thought that kaiju looked kind of like from an old video game, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, I think that scene is really good because we, you know, like we have this new version of Ultraman that we're being introduced to and we don't really know what's going on. So I think it's still like the sense of suspense and excitement is still there. But just in terms of the CGI, yeah, that's not a great scene. But I think like the alien Zarub, who looks awesome, like,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't have a back half of its body. It has like glowing jewels for eyes. And I think that is a combination of like a great costume, but also CGI work. Like that looks amazing. I love that.
Impeccable design and execution. Zarub, I love that character too. I'm getting into my good and bad right now, but I'll save it. Let's get through this and then we can talk a little bit more about our specific reviews.
That sounds good. I guess just on this topic, I think it's cool that the effect of like the laser beams that Ultraman shoots out of his hand, which apparently is called the Spacium Beam, but the way it was achieved, it was the same way they achieved that in the 1966 series, which is that the optical artist Sadao Iizuka would draw a series of rays on paper and change their length and position slightly each time. And I would assume, although I didn't really get more information about this, that was then kind of like superimposed over the like, you know, recorded images or whatever. So that's just a cool idea that like the way that they achieved those laser effects was just by like drawing them and superimposing them. That's pretty cool.
It looked really cool.
Yeah.
And the cinematography and the editing, similar to Shin Godzilla in that it's like bizarre compositions rapidly edited together. The editing was so quick.
No, I have something to say about that too, but perhaps I'll wait until you say your piece in our upcoming segment here.
Okay, great.
So yeah, let's start with the good. This movie is so entertaining. Like it's 2 hours long. It's a couple of minutes short of 2 hours long. And like the plot is all over the place. There are three different villains that appear at like different times of the movie, but it is so fun. Like I really do think that it kind of like recreates that feeling. You mentioned this before, Vincent, of like being a kid and like settling down in front of the TV on Saturday morning. And like, you know, you have your, like for me, it was Johnny Quest and G.I. Joe. Those are the shows that I loved when I was a kid. Now looking back on them, I realize how much like ideological questionable stuff is in those. But you know, while watching Shin Ultraman, I just couldn't help but think like if those franchises were rebooted, G.I. Joe or Johnny Quest, of course there have been some G.I. Joe movies, but like and they're not very good, but if they had been done in this way with like creativity and ambition and insight, like I just can't imagine that happening for like a Hollywood sort of like reboot of a franchise. And it's too bad because Shin Ultraman is like the textbook, and Shin Godzilla, they're the textbook of like how to do a reboot of a franchise in like a really great creative artistic way.
I will add, the score for this movie is so much fun, and it's so, it exudes a lot of youth. It's like a really youthful score and very 60s, which is in line with the original series. And it's very science fiction-y and groovy. Yeah. And then, but then there's also like a lot of electric guitar riffs throughout the movie to enhance the action. And it's just so awesome to see kaiju fight to this like Japanese electric guitar. I love those moments.
I totally agree. I'm glad you brought up the musical score. It's so much fun. Like I, It's of course like so different than like the classic Akira Ifukube scores that we hear in like Godzilla.
And that's the different tone from Shin Godzilla that, you know, it didn't, and Shin Ultraman didn't try to be moody. It didn't try to be something aesthetically that it's not. And more power to it for that. Sticking to its guns, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Higuchi said, Shinji Higuchi, that's kind of what they set out to do. Like, they didn't want to make, a kid's movie with Shin Ultraman. They wanted to make a movie that could, like, recreate those feelings of nostalgia and excitement for, like, people that grew up with this, but now are, you know, older, obviously. So I feel like they did that perfectly well.
Yep, I agree.
What about the bad category?
So we talked about how much we loved Zareb specifically as an antagonist. And I loved that character so much. I loved where the movie was going with that. And then they did away with that character. And it's sort of this. So Shin Ultraman is sort of broken into three parts. And in each part, you get a different main antagonist. That was too disruptive for me. I wanted to see one story for 2 hours. And instead, I got a nary a through line through the three episodes. I kind, you know, it's kind of there. They lead into each other a little bit, but ultimately, it wasn't the kind of story structure that I naturally click with.
It's very episodic, and I don't like. It doesn't seem very intentional in like the ways that it is so episodic. Like it's all of a sudden, it's just like, all right, that storyline is wrapped up. Now we'll move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely bumpy and messy, and that's pretty much my main critique of the movie as well.
I got a little, I was a little over with all the chaotic editing by the end. Like, I get that that's the style, and it's just like Shin Godzilla. I don't know what the main, I don't know why you're doing it all the time.
Yeah, that's the issue for me. Like, I think it's more purposeful in Shin Godzilla because I feel like that style is meant to be like, you know, the intense pace of like modern politics, and they have to make split second decisions. But of course, it takes them like days or weeks to actually decide anything, you know? Like, it makes a little bit more sense there. But here, it kind of is just supposed to be like a fun throwback, albeit with like a lot of kind of unexpected philosophical themes and stuff like that. But like, the kind of frantic pace and like the very kind of like sleek visual style makes a little bit less sense here than it did in Shin Godzilla, I think.
Yeah, but those are my only two main qualms with the film, but ultimately it overcomes those deficiencies for me. And again, deficiencies is a broad term. It's just a personal taste. You know, I think it's still a really well-made, constructed film.
Yeah, totally 100% agree with all that. Those are pretty much my only two criticisms as well. And like, you know, I will admit that like the messy plot does make it like, I, you know, I just remember thinking like, where are we right now? Who is this guy? Like, it does keep things interesting. So I guess that's good, you know?
Yeah.
Not all.
Yeah. I just want more Zareb. He was such a great little conniving fedora wearing alien, the best creature I've seen in a movie in a while.
Absolutely, yeah. Zareb is probably my favorite part of the film. I think like thematically it would make more sense for Zophie to be like the antagonist throughout the entire thing, but I mean, I love Zareb, so I'm not going to complain about that too much.
Yeah, you know who I would remove? I would remove the Mephiles chunk.
Yeah.
And then you'd have a clean 90-minute movie. You have Zareb, and then it goes right into Zophie. Perfect.
Totally agree. Yeah. It's cool to imagine that version of the movie, but still the one that we have before us is pretty great.
Yeah. It's all good.
Do you have anything to add to the campy category?
I guess I just said it. Like, Zareb wears a fedora, and he's like in a trench coat too. It's like some sort of shady character from a 1940s noir.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine like Peter Lorre could have played the Zareb character, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Maltese Falcon or something like that.
Yeah. I was like, who is this guy? I love him.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems to have wandered in from another movie, and I love it. He's
right. Because we're dealing with like traditional kaiju like Ghidorah, and it's like, oh, these things could be in a Godzilla movie. But then with Ultraman, it is very much a space oriented character, so you get the extraterrestrials into it. And I'm like, oh, now it's a different flavor. Now we're trying something new.
Yeah. I only have one campy thing to add, and I honestly don't know if this is camp. Like, it's very intentional humor. It's a funny joke, I think. So maybe I'm using the word camp a little bit incorrectly, but there's just a hilarious, totally non-politically correct joke throughout the entire movie where the character of Asami, in order to sort of like pump herself up, she like smacks herself in the ass, like very enthusiastically, like to get herself going. And then she starts doing that to like other agents in the SSSP, just like, you know, slapping their asses basically. And it's very goofy. It's very ridiculous. I feel like the Japanese government probably would frown upon that. She might get some HR complaints, but but it's really, really funny and unexpected. I love that joke.
I agree. Some quirky flair to her.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, yeah. Should we get to our ratings here at the end?
Let's do it.
All right. So as you Camp Kaiju listeners know, we have our four ratings. Number one, it's a timeless classic and stands the test of time. Number two, there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and stands the test of time. Number three, it may be historically significant or fun, but does not stand the test of time. And number four, it is not worth revisiting and definitely does not stand the test of time.
I will go first. I think it has some flaws in story, in editing and pacing, in the characterization. However, I still think it's great. I think it does stand the test of time. It will stand the test of time, I should say. Great companion piece to Shin Godzilla. If I want more Ultraman movies in this vein, and that's where I'm at with it. I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah. 100% agree. I feel like this is the rating where we've been the most like-minded. We've been similar on some other ones too, but yeah, agree with everything you said. I feel like the kind of like uneven plot is like the main flaw of the film. I would say that keeps it from like really being great or like a classic years down the road, although time will tell. But yeah, I think it will stand the test of time. Yeah, not just with other Ultraman movies, but with anything Shinji Higuchi does and with all the upcoming like Sheen films that are made, like Kamen Rider coming up. I really can't wait to see what they do with it.
Shin Japan Heroes Universe.
I'll stand for that. Is that what the... I should just not try to say any young, youthful lingo. Sorry.
Oh, I have no idea. And I teach high schoolers.
I take it back. I am a fan. I will say that. Shin... Can you say it one more time?
Shin Japan Heroes Universe.
Cool. I can't wait.
Thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you hear, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Instagram, or Patreon for more monster movie content. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. And before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with parts of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And as Camp Kaiju says, thanks again, friends. Until next time, stay campy.
メフィラス、ベーターシステムを持ってさっさとこの星から立ち去れ。
慎んでお断りする。
Kaminaga disagrees with Mephiles, right?
Yeah. As far as I know.
Yeah. Ultraman Superior Zophie?
I think they said Zophie in the movie.
I think so too. Doing great.